Welcome to the Lean Blog Podcast. Visit our website at www.leanblog.org. Now, here's your host, Mark Graben.
Hi, this is Mark Graben from the Lean Blog. This is episode number 26 of the Lean Blog Podcast for June 3rd, 2007. Our guest today is Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth of the Visual Lean Institute and the author of the book Visual Workplace Visual Thinking. You can find her website at www.vlinstitute.com. If you have feedback on this or other podcasts, please contact me. Information about doing so can be found at leanpodcast.org or the blog website at leanblog.org. Thanks for listening. Dr. Gwendolyn Galsworth, thanks for being here.
I'm delighted.
Well, I was hoping you could start off by introducing yourself to our listeners, the work that you do, and maybe also give us a little bit of the background of how you first got started with Lean or with visual methods.
Yes, thanks very much. I'm delighted to be here, Mark. Thanks for asking me. I started way, way back in 1982 when I started working at productivity for a gentleman that some of your listeners will know about, Norman Bodak.
Of course.
I actually was writing my dissertation on his server and having a lot of trouble. It was a Wang and just took me a whole year to figure out how to use a computer and then how to get the words that I wanted into a report, into a thesis. And I was writing on the participation of the poor in local decision making because I was very interested in that. I'm interested in the distribution of power and how people actually can participate when they don't want to and all of that stuff. And as I was finishing up, I was in like my 10th month at that damn computer. Oh, excuse me, I'm not supposed to curse at darn computer. And Norman passed by one day and said, "Are you still here?" And he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm writing a report on," and it was the participation of the poor. And I barely finished that sentence when he said, "I'll give you a job when you're done." And that was it. I started suddenly working in manufacturing, and first thing he did was send me to Japan. Of course, it makes perfect sense to lead study missions. I was completely unqualified, and in Japan, I was found myself smack in the middle of this incredible system called the Toyota Production System, and Toyota and I had the privilege of working with Shingo, but also meeting Ono and, touching the greatness of what this was, this great thought. And for me, it was this great thought that had to be penetrated and understood. And I saw these things that eventually had names like Andon and Judoka and Kanban and all of this stuff. And I knew there was something there, and I was very drawn to it. When I got, as I began my work at Productivity, I was given certain projects to do, but I kept coming back to visual, coming back. And I developed a few products for Norman on visual that were very successful. And I said, you know, they're successful, but they don't really work. They don't really allow us to implement continuously and to roll over to the next iteration. They're just kind of pretty and interesting, and they create awareness but not change. And he said, you know, Norman, if you're listening, he said something like, "Oh, shut up, Gwendolyn, just keep doing what you're doing." And finally he didn't say shut up, but he said, it's okay, I'm making plenty of money on this. What a brilliant entrepreneur, wow. And eventually I had to leave because I wasn't able to focus on visual, and that's when I started my own company in 1990. And I just dove into this visual paradigm, which I didn't know, and over the next 15 years, I've been developing it, and it's been producing tremendous insight and usefulness, and that's how I got brought into it.
Yeah. Sounds like kind of an accidental introduction to Lean and the Toyota Production System.
Absolutely. I used to be a hospice director. I helped people die, and before that, I was a Latin teacher. So this was entirely out of the blue.
So now you have published a number of books over the years, and have provided consulting services for people to help implement visual methods within factories, correct?
Correct.
And can you tell us a little bit about maybe the most recent book, Visual Workplace, Visual Thinking? Kind of what are some of the key concepts of what you call the visual workplace or visuality?
Yes, one of the this book I wrote because it was becoming so difficult in a short 20 minutes to explain to clients or other people what visual was, and I wanted them to have an experience that they could have through reading. The book, as you know, has over, I think, something like 230 colored pictures in it. And I wanted people to just jump in and spend a day reading this book and get how powerful visuality is and what an alliance you can build when you combine it with work in the critical path, what you call lean, with streamlining the critical path. And that's what the book is about. The book is about a way of thinking about seeing the opportunity that visual gives you as actual information deficits, missing information from the workplace, and fulfilling those, addressing those deficits through solutions that are visual, so that the answer isn't just putting in place the information, but that the information is embedded into the actual workplace and embedded into the process of work, because you can deeply embed the attributes of work, not just the visual where, the visual what, the visual when, how many, who, but also the actual attributes of a process, and that is known as Pokeyoke. I've been working over the last 15 years on two major ways of modeling what visual is. One of them is called the 10 doorways, which is there are 10 ways to get into the visual workplace, and each of those doors can be opened. Each of those ways or those doors can be opened by a different group in the company. For example, you give Pokeyoke, or what I call visual guarantees, to your quality group. That's a whole doorway, and it allows them to both increase the level of quality through Pokeyoke, this brilliant paradigm of Shingo's, working to create a model that the West could use and understand and was applicable. And I think that's pretty much all over the place now. But that doorway belongs to quality, I think, best, working with the shop floor, working with engineers. And then there are other doorways. The first doorway that's usually opened is the doorway called what I call visual order, visual inventiveness, what a lot of other people call 5S. And that doorway belongs, may I say, exclusively to the shop floor. It is both how it is driven through the shop floor and it, how it reaches its fulfillment. And there are eight other doorways. But so I wanted to say one of the main concepts in the book, and this is what I have learned by my failures and some of my victories, is that each doorway is driven by the group that is responsible for opening it and accountable for that outcome. I call that eye-driven. And it's the power of the eye. It's actually the power of the individual consciousness to know what information that person needs to work well, to be a hero at work, which is another conversation I have in the book, how important it is for people to feel, you know, really excellent. They feel excellence in their daily work. I call it feeling like a hero. And those are some important concepts. The other model, let me just mention the second model before I go back to the first, if you want me to. And that is, the second model is called the Blueprint for Visual Rollout. It's a progression of methodologies. It looks like a house. And on the ground floor, we see the first doorway, as it were, only it looks like a block. It looks like a basement. And it is visual order, what you call 5S, as the foundation. And it's not just the foundation in the way that Womack talks about it, that you have to do 5S in order, you know, as a precursor to lean. Of course, there's that functionality. But it's the foundation because it allows us to establish what's called the visual where much, much more robustly than some people think. The visual where in our formula is the visual where needs to be really embedded thoroughly. And our formula for that is a border home address and, if possible, an ID label. And here's the catch: for everything that casts a shadow. If it casts a shadow, it gets a border and a home address. It might be an airborne address. It might be an in-border address. It's an address. And if possible, an ID label on the thing itself. That thing is kind of variable. And I will tell you, Mark, and I'll take a breath in a moment. You can insert another question. what's so interesting is that the lean folk really, really resist that. And one of the main reasons they resist the idea of border around everything that casts a shadow is because they think, you know what? What happens if I create a different flow? Mm-hmm. And so, of course, that is easily addressed as well. But let me just stop now and
there's a lot of interesting thoughts. I mean, you know, me personally, as a lean implementer, I don't resist that idea of bordering. Because we usually try to emphasize doing it in ways that aren't permanent, like paint. Mm-hmm. You know, using tape and things that are
easily
changeable can help it seem, you know, help it be more flexible
rather than
being permanent. And yeah, I did want to say I'd like to hear a little bit more about eye-driven culture. I see there's a chapter about it in the book. I mean, for one, it is a beautiful book with a lot of great examples. I'd certainly encourage people to take a look at it, because the irony here is that we're talking about visual methods in a completely audio medium here with the podcast, which is going to cause some challenges. But there are some great pictures and examples that really kind of opened my eyes to a couple different methods and different approaches. And one thing that stood out in particular I wanted to ask you about was this notion of right angles and how maybe if you can explain how right angles in lines and orientation of things can lead to different types of problems.
Oh, that is such a great practical example that will, I think, help people who are listening get the image. Well, there's this kind of misbegotten notion that if it's at right angles, it's neat and orderly, mm-hmm. and it's correct, because we sort of have this, what is it called, slide rule mentality. And in fact, many of the Japanese-based books talk about right angles, or let's say they don't not talk about it. But in fact, what I discovered is that in teaching right angles in the 1980s, I have to introduce another major kind of term of art so that I can talk about this better. Mm-hmm. And that is, I want to go back to information deficits, everybody, just for a second. Information deficits are the cause, but the symptom, what it causes, is what I call motion.
Right.
Motion moving without working. I was looking for a way 10 years ago, something like that, to describe a waste that wasn't as generic as waste or as widespread as the seven deadly wastes plus one. Mm-hmm. And as I was working on my first book, which is called Visual Systems, I realized that the way to describe this was already part of the seven deadly wastes, and that is the waste called motion, which is defined by Toyota as moving without working.
Right.
And it works beautifully, because it means that when you are moving and not working, you are moving and not adding value. And therefore, and what is the cause of that? In my study and in my implementations, I realize again and again that the cause of motion, of that definition, that narrow definition, moving without working, is an information deficit. And if we can simply notice our motion and then realize it's been triggered by an information deficit, we can go back up the causal chain, mm-hmm. I should say down the causal chain, and find the cause, which is missing information and information deficit. So getting back to right angles, the thing about right angles is that they are a far better solution than no visual at all. So you have a place and you have a border, and you can go back there, see if it's missing, see if it's there, fill up the hole, whatever. But when you watch the forklift driver trying to make a right angle with his 12-foot, 7-inch forklift, mm-hmm. and he's going,
trying to turn that thing.
Yeah, he's turning. He's doing his K-turn. And then you see him backing out again. You say, wait a minute. Why is this a basic premise of visuality when it's creating motion? Mm-hmm. Let's go through another iteration, because the information deficit is, I don't think I can make a case as missing information except as mislaid information. And a forklift driver, Joe Podolsky, maybe his name was Bill, Bill Podolsky at Denison Hydraulics, now Denison, Parker Denison, asked if he could just put a little border on a corner so that he could cut that corner. This was a corner, like a corner of a street. He said,
right.
Do you mind if I put a little? And I said, why is that? And mm-hmm. he said, because it would be so much easier for me to just cut off that little corner, but I don't want to show any disrespect to, it was Dorothy and Sheila who had put the border down.
Right.
I don't want to show any disrespect. And I said, tell me more. And then this whole thing came out. And he said, and I said, would it help to have them all at angles? And he said, it would be a miracle because it would save so much work.
And that's a great example of, you know, to me is a lean notion of, you know, getting input from the people actually doing the work. In this case, a fork truck driver. If as engineers or managers, we've never driven a fork truck, it might make sense to us, or it might look visually neat to have those right angles.
That's right. That's right. It looks cosmetically. It looks cosmetically presentable, but it's not functional. Yeah. But you know, I would say, Mark, to that, there's such a minute level of listening to really notice this gentleman who is apologetically saying, excuse me, could I have a moment?
Right.
And really understanding that this is an opportunity to learn something new. I mean, I'm learning stuff all the time, and this was just like a bolt of lightning.
Yeah. And I like the way you described this notion of missing information. I mean, that to me, that was something new, or at least it was a different terminology to think in terms of, you know, why do we put in visual controls, or, you know, what visual controls do we put in first? So can you describe some examples of missing information that might pop up in a typical factory?
I'd be happy to. And do you mind if I just adjust your vocabulary a little bit? For me, a visual control is a visual solution that shares information through structure, through limits. It actually controls us the way a Kanban does, a min-max level does, some kind of the way a parking lot does, for example, control our behavior by laying down these functional controlling lines, which I call borders. I've taken myself away from your question.
Types of missing information.
Yes. Yeah. They actually fall into six categories.
Okay.
They fall into where are things. That means anything from a part to a work order to a person to tooling or whatever. So that is, for me, what 5S is about. You install the visual where. That's not the only purpose, but that would be a whole category of information. The missing what. What am I supposed to be doing? Let me think of some other what questions. They're not coming to me now.
What am I supposed to produce next, maybe?
What is the spec?
Right.
What is the exact attribute I'm supposed to be capturing through, for example, the how? And then is what is the how? How do I do it? How much time? That's another category. So how do I do it? So there are these six core questions, which are basically what a lot of people know as the four W's and the two H's. Mm-hmm. Where, what, when, who, how many, and how.
Right.
And that's an example. But I remember an example by that was done by, I remember these people's names because they taught me so much, Camilla and Nate. Nate was an engineer who wanted his report at 8:05 every morning, and Camilla came in at 7:30 to make the report, and he kept hounding her, is it ready yet, is it ready yet, is it ready yet? And because they had the visual language, she said, you know what, Nate, I'm beginning to hate you, and hate is a form of motion. So there's an information deficit here. Mm-hmm. Why don't we figure out a way for me to let you know so that you simply know and you leave me alone until you know. So they came up with this little red clothespin, and when the report was ready, Camilla put a little red clothespin up, and until it was there, the report wasn't ready. And then when Nate took the report, he put the clothespin down, so that Camilla could see from the other side of the room if she was at the copy or whatever. He got his gosh darn report.
Yeah, okay.
It's over with for another day. So that's, you know, that's such a beautiful example of an information deficit triggering motion. Mm-hmm. And the motion, actually, any kind of frustration or hate, anger, you know, this lots and lots of grievances are almost always in an environment that is overrun with information deficits. You start using visuality, and those grievances come down to nothing. I've seen it happen again and again in a union plant because people come to work to be heroes, and they're angry when you are in the way. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to managers now. Yeah.
And so back to your point about visual control, and one of the things I liked early in the book here, kind of this the different terms of I don't have the exact hierarchy right. Visual control all the way up through visual guarantee.
Yes.
I liked that framework and the way that you laid that out.
Yeah, thank you. I'm going to put a little plug in for our video system because we have this 10-video, now DVD, in about a month DVD, video system. We spend like a half an hour, maybe 45 minutes, talking about the distinction there. And what's important there, why do you bother? why don't we just say everything in 45 minutes? It's because visuality engages the workforce on the level of their thinking. And people love their visual world. And what we want them to know about the four types or the four power levels of visuality is that they're already in a world that is using these. And it gets people very engaged in their daily life, in mm-hmm. the community, in the roadways. And immediately that comes back and feeds the workplace and the visuality in the workplace. So you have visual indicator that tells only. You have a railroad crossing that says railroad crossing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't help the 17-year-old. Then you have a visual indicator. So you put lights on it. You catch mm-hmm. people's attention
yeah.
so that it delivers the message. Then I'm looking up and now I notice the sign, railroad crossing. Then you put a visual control in, which in this case it's a little bit gross. It doesn't. The analogy begins to break down a little bit. Is you put the gate.
Right.
But the 17-year-old is still going to go around.
You can see, right.
It's not maybe fully, he's a 14-year-old.
It's not fully error-proofed.
It's not error-proofed, yeah. exactly. And then we go to visual guarantees. And in this case, the only kind of analogy or kind of continuance we can create is that we put the train above on a bridge and the car below so that they don't touch, or we put the train underground the way we see in big cities to completely
yeah.
eliminate the possibility of that particular motion or yeah. error or information
yeah.
deficit.
Let's just have those gates go all the way across where you know, it's not possible.
Oh, yeah,
to drive
very
around.
Good.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Excellent. Good so, thinking.
Yeah.
Good visual thinking. And I want to say one more thing because I saw your lead article today about 5S. What was it that it said?
Well, it was an example, and I'll link to it for people listening here today. You can come back to
okay.
The website, and I'll make sure that there's
making things harder.
The post. Yeah, it was an example. A reader of the blog had posted a comment saying that you know her workplace had gone through what he or she called a very counterproductive 5S initiative. Of that,
mm-hmm.
the workplace had been cleaned up and looked neat, and I could just you know, the sarcasm was coming
yeah.
through very clear. But you know, to make it look neat, they had taken tools that used to be 3 feet away, used for changeover, and they were now 700 feet away, and you could
yeah,
tell
that
this
wild.
Was just beyond irritating, and I think understandably so.
Yeah, and it just cuts into the spirit. The spirit dies in stuff like that when there doesn't make any sense. And that's a very extreme example. But I wanted to say with my little soapbox here is that one of the big problems with, I think, this is just my experience, 5S gets into is when it becomes a repetitious known outcome and people focus on the method
right.
5S rather than the outcome, which for me, the outcome isn't neat and clean. I honestly never talk about neat and clean to adults.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly I start looking like their mother or worse.
Right.
And, you know, it just doesn't work. But I talk to them about visuality, and I would say to everybody listening, if you're having trouble with 5S, get rid of the name 5S. Take it out of your strategic plan and call it visual factory or visual hospital mm-hmm. or visuality. But it's like me being on a diet. I think I write about this in the book. I used to fit into a really nice little black size 10 dress, and I have that dress. I've held on to it. And as I am kind of getting control of my eating, I look at that dress. I don't look at all the cottage cheese and fruit I have to eat. The cottage cheese and fruit is dreary and boring. And that's the way with 5S. If you keep talking about neat and clean, 5S, 5S, you're talking about the method, not the outcome, not the visionary
mm-hmm.
outcome that's really going to inspire us to own it and to love it and to make it even more glorious,
yeah.
more splendid. And just get rid of 5S. It's like a curse word mm. in some place.
Well, I think it's been mis-implemented
yes.
and gotten a bad reputation.
Yes.
I like the way you put that in terms of moving away from an overly prescriptive, you know, thou shalt, maybe for an example, thou shalt put tape around everything is very
yes.
prescriptive and can seem boring. But it sounds like this eye-driven approach is more a matter of talking about the goals with people and letting them figure out what's helpful to remove, as you call it, the information deficits, or you know, what helps you make your workplace easier to interact with? Is that
well
a
said?
Good way of
well
saying
said.
It?
Okay. Well said. I would add a little bit more to that by saying it is a word that hasn't been introduced in this conversation yet. It is about empowerment. But let me say, with empowerment, it has to do with power, and it's the power for you to decide what are your, for you to know what your information deficits are, and then for you to create solutions to those information deficits. It is what you described before with the rules and the thou shalt. Mm-hmm. This is the obedience paradigm that so doesn't work. It doesn't work in Japan, although folks have a more of an agreement about what standard is. Mm-hmm. There's more of an agreement. But I met the man who created 14,000 implemented improvement ideas. This was in Okidata in 1987. He won the prize for all of Japan. 14,000 implemented improvement ideas. Boy, he didn't get anybody's agreement. He just plowed through it and kept coming up with this, you know, I mean, imagine how many you have to do every day. He would come home at night and dictate to his wife after dinner. His wife would make the dinner, and then he would dictate his ideas, and the next day he would start implementing.
Yeah.
This is a force of nature. I'm not saying that we could withstand that in the United States if we had 180 people working and all of them wanted to do improvement to that level, but it is, it demonstrates this fundamental. The fundamental existence of this power that we have, and empowerment is about the distribution of power. And empowerment, for in my mind, also involves engineers. It involves supervisors. They have signed on. Well, it's just that supervisors also. There's a piece that we call visual displays, and it's what you call production control boards. Visual displays, and I have seen so much of this come up for in the lean paradigm, where we have these dashboards, or we have these, you know, what is the yield, what is the lost feet, and all of that, and that works well enough. But if you really ask the supervisor, what are your information deficits? What's your mm-hmm. need to know? It might be, I just need to know if material prep has made its delivery, so that I can, you know. Is it coming? When is it coming? Is it going to be complete? So this yield thing, they go further down the causal chain, supervisors, when you ask them to identify their need to know. And if you give them the opportunity to capture that visually and get that basic information of their need to know on their need to know level, what will happen is that there will be this environment of safety where the supervisor's needs are also being met. You see,
yep.
They'll feel safe. They'll feel this control that they need. Anyway, it's another one of my many, many soapboxes. But the thing is, I know we're running out of time, Mark, and I want to say the thing about visuality that visual has taught me mm-hmm. is that you need a language that holds the excellence of the organization. And that language needs to be not words or on the page, but it needs to be alive and dynamic in the work environment itself. And that's what visual does. It is so far from neat and clean, it's like saying clipping my toenails is keeping me healthy. Well, that's a part of it. But health is so much greater than that. And that's what visuality is about in its many, many aspects. It's been my pleasure over the last 25 years to have an opportunity to explore this and to write about it and to present it. But this is what feeds me and what really, really gets me going every day if I forget.
Well, I think we can all hear the passion and the excitement for the topic.
Am I being too loud?
No, not at all. This has been
a
very enjoyable discussion. And it's hard. I know it can be a challenge to sum up 25 years worth of work in the 25 minutes or so that we've had today. But, you know, I certainly hope we could talk again and delve into some of the other, the culture aspects, because I certainly get a sense from a first look at your book that there's more to this than just the tools. And there's so many, wonderful pictures in the book of showing, the visual management, but it sounds like there's so many more levels of, not just the tool, but the culture and the management system and the respect for people, as our friend Norman would talk about.
Yes.
So I would certainly
exactly.
like to delve into that more.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah, please.
Can I say just about, you know, people who are listening, if you would tell Mark what you want to talk about through your responses, I'm not exactly, I think you send notes back and forth. Mm-hmm. That would be a nice way to let the topics be lined up. I think this is what you have in mind anyway, lined up with your viewership or your listening ship.
Right. And so, you know,
who are they?
If people have comments, the easiest way is to go to leanpodcast.org, and there's information there about how to leave feedback. So maybe final thoughts, Gwen, could you tell us a little bit about how to find you and what websites or how they could learn more about visuality?
Thanks. That's so kind of you. We have a website that's been around for a long time called visualworkplace.com, and we have a new website that I just found out this morning from our webmaster, Harold, went live today, which is called VL Institute, the Visual Lean Institute, VL Institute, where we do our training of trainers. We have a forum there. I need to find somebody who can head up that forum. We're a small organization that have been blessed with a big mission, which is this visuality thing, where we hope that our websites are better serve well, but I do with apologies say right now that they're not quite up to snuff, they're not complete, but we think that in the next 3 or 4 months we'll be able to put something together. But you can get all the books on visualworkplace.com and then learn about the training of trainers on the VL Institute.
Well, great. Well, certainly want to thank you again, Gwen, for joining us and talking about your work and the book and visuality. It certainly introduced a lot of interesting ways of thinking about some topics that myself and I think a lot of our listeners may have been working with and struggling with. And I think it's certainly like to recommend the book as an eye opener and maybe a way of kickstarting some further progress for people. So I want to thank you for taking the time out today.
Oh, it's entirely my pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
Sure.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Lean Blog Podcast. For lean news and commentary updated daily, visit www.leanblog.org. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email Mark at leanpodcast@gmail.com.